Welcome to Big Blend Radio's art show featuring Victoria Chick, a contemporary figurative artist and early 19th and 20th century print collector. Welcome, everybody. Today we are opening up the Big Blend Radio vault of interviews with artist Victoria Chick to revisit an interview about the artist Georges Schreiber, a very interesting artist whose career spanned, was pretty much in the 1930s and 40s, but he was born in 1904 in Brussels, Belgium, to German parents. And Victoria really takes a look at his work, his life, his legacy. And it is fascinating what this man produced. So stay tuned and enjoy.
Georges Schreiber, you talk about him being an American scene painter, but he—it's when we say that he
did become
American
citizen,
but he paints American scenes too.
That's true. The poor little guy. He was a young kid when World War I broke out. So he was about 10 years old, probably. So. Even during the years of the war and even after the war, he was in Brussels when he was born, but his parents were German, and they moved back to Germany, and Germany after World War I was in dire straits, if you recall that part of history. It was a depression in Germany, so his young years, I think, really encouraged him to get out of Europe, and he came to the United States when he was in his 20s, so I think when he... You know, it was his dream to come to the United States, and he really, really loved the United States. And his goal was to visit every part of the United States and draw or paint everything that he saw, all the activities of daily activities of people. So he did become a scene painter, American scene painter. He was really closely allied with the regionalists too, and. Because they had some common goals, but or common time kinds of subject matter, but he just loved the United States. He loved it in his artwork, and in the things that he wrote, he expressed a great admiration for and a sort of a feeling of real happiness that he was finally in the United States.
How interesting, how people fall in love with certain areas and then just, and I think what's interesting, because we are, like, when we talk about such a diverse collection of people in this country.
Right.
But you think back, I mean, because he was born in 1904, but he was here in 1928 is when he first, came over here.
Right.
But,
right.
So for him, I mean, at that time, it's not like we're as bustling of a country as we, back then, we weren't as busy. Like, we didn't have as many people to look at.
But then he went from depression to depression.
Well, that's interesting, yeah.
He got here right before the stock market crashed. I mean, and even then, he felt lucky to be here. Mm. So, I can only imagine what his growing up years must have been like, because of the depression in the United States was not a piece of cake. And,
no.
Another thing interesting to me was that when World War II came along, he was right in there doing things for the military. He was an artist for the military. So that was another, I guess, an aspect of his love for the United States.
And that was interesting. I was reading, you have an article on this, and it's Thomas Hart Benton that he became friends with. But they were doing this project where they were trying to capture the life on a submarine. I mean, that's because it's interesting. You don't hear as much about submarines now as what was, going on back then. And,
when you
look at the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we've interviewed the men who were there at the got the orders to not bomb and then have the whole thing with Russia. And doing that interview and talking to the gentlemen who, served and were on those submarines and hearing what submarine life was like, because I think, when you started hearing submarines, people living under the ocean, basically, in these big tanks, that is totally bizarre. I mean, if you thought, okay, you're a kid and you don't know what a submarine is and those are new, it's like suddenly you're spending years of your life under the sea. That's weird. You would never think that's going to happen to you. you know.
Well, I guess it sounds like it could be a dangerous situation. You know, not just even in war, even in without war, it's a dangerous situation, or it appeared to be to most people. I know that they make these things very well, and then, you know, they've got just submarines that have been around a long time without any problems. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they require constant monitoring and maintenance.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, but I think it's so important when you start to portray this as artists, is there's these roles that artists play in mm-hmm. preserving our history. I mean, we talked about this on the shows for years, but it's true. I mean, for people to understand what, you know, our military service are going through, I think that's, you know, even war photography, which I find it's brutal, but it's there. It's like art and journalism put together. You know, when people start to, you know, artists start capturing things like submarine life. It's so people understand. Otherwise, if we have no idea what soldiers are going through, we lose that connection, and that's a dangerous thing to lose.
Right. I'm sure you remember when they quit having the draft, and mm-hmm. there were some positive things about the draft in that. That everybody, almost everybody, would have the chance of being called up, and mm-hmm. when you, I guess I just sort of spread it out more so that people, families at home, were more involved in what went on, and wherever mm. the battleground was, and there was, nobody wants people to be killed, but
right.
I don't know, it made something, there was a more of a family feeling to the Americans in general. I mean, we felt as a group.
It's everyone's going through this kind of thing.
Yeah, because everybody
it's
pretty
not
much
picking
had a relative.
One group of people. You know, it's every,
right.
Well, that in South Africa, the military side of things, where you came out of high school as a guy, and you had to serve for 2 years in the military. And that meant some people did end up in you know, combat during those 2 years.
Yes.
But or you could go to university and then do your 2 year service, but everybody had to do it. And mm-hmm. there were some really horrific things that happened actually from that people were not ready for, and it's just because there was turmoil going on
sure.
in that country at the time. But yeah, that's, you know, people had that. And for some young boys, it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, just saying.
I've talked to a lot of men, you know, who are in their 80s now, and they say they're thinking back to their military experience, and they said, you know, mm-hmm. it made them grow up in a lot of ways that were good. So mm-hmm. There is that. And of course, they said one of the biggest things was they were never niche before the military, and after the military service, they really put things away and were very neat people.
Mm. You have that little discipline side. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their different thing on it. And I think it's hard especially with, you know, young men.
If
sometimes.
You could just kind of be there for defense but not ever really have to go into combat, it would be kind of a cool thing.
Some of my friends totally shouldn't have been in it and shouldn't and ended up in situations that none of them were prepared for. And, but anyway, let's not go there. let's talk about Georges, because I think, too, what was interesting is that, you know, when he got to the States in 1928, he started doing cartoons for newspapers. And it's such a because right there, if you're doing a cartoon, I think like comedians, I know you love Dave Barry, that means that there's this other level of observation to me when you're starting to do cartoons. You're really getting to the nitty-gritty of something. That's hard to do, but
it should be
really well rewarded, as far as I'm concerned.
I haven't seen any of his cartoons that I know of, so I don't know what type of cartooning he did. I'm assuming that he was doing like political commentary. So, because he was selling them, you know, like it wasn't a daily strip, is what I'm saying. So, you do have to pick up what's going on in the country as a foreigner. you would have a different, you might have a different outlook going in, or a different bias, or a different way of seeing things than somebody who's lived there all their life. And that can be good, you know.
That's true. Yeah, I think so.
You know, it really is true when you look at somebody coming from an outer area and then looking in. It's like, oh, you people do this. It's like a zoo.
Nice.
Yeah. It is now.
All in the zoo for Europeans. Come
no,
on.
No, no. Come look at us. You know. Yeah, we wear cowboy boots. You know. But again,
well, some people do and some people don't.
Yeah. So that's an interesting perspective. You know, Janis Joplin got her start being a cartoonist, a singer. So many people have got, I'd like to do an article one day on just how many people used being a cartoonist, you know, or a character artist to get ahead in their field. And
I think political cartooning has got to be really fun.
Nancy wants to do it. That's dangerous. That's dangerous, you know.
You get in trouble doing that.
I know. But, yeah, so how did you get in, you know, find out about him? Is this another print collecting? Because we do have the image of the lithograph, and it's called Going Home in 1945 is when it was done. Is that how you, you know, stumbled onto him? Is in your collecting of prints?
Well, yes, it actually was. George Schreiber is one of those people that I'm always so happy to discover, because I don't know, I have never heard of these people before. I never heard of George Schreiber. And, you know, even though he's a friend of Thomas Hart Benton, you would think that I might have seen his artwork, you know, being talked about sometime, but I hadn't. So it was a thrill when I saw this image. I actually saw it on the Internet, and I thought, wow, I really like that, and I'd like to have it. So I saw about getting it, but I'd like to see more of his work, too. I haven't seen very much, although he must have done a lot. He was really, really well-received. His work was well-received at the galleries. When he got here to the United States, he spent about 3 years just driving all over the country. Of course, you've got your 1936 car, and you're driving all over the country, and the roads were probably interesting in places. The highways were not very well developed, but he preferred rural scenes, and we went to the South. He did laborers in the South. He did coal miners in the East. He did gold miners in the West. I mean, he just was attracted to the everyday kind of person, and which is why he gets his association with the American scene painters. And I've only seen his lithographs, so I don't know what his color palette was, his painting was like. I would really like to investigate him more, and I would like to see more of his work. So I'm going to try and track that down.
I was Googling him to see, like, other images and things, and I can't find anything. And even on Wikipedia, like, he's in all these collections, and there's no link to go, like, he needs his own Wikipedia page.
Yeah, you know what happens a lot of times because I've looked, I've had mixed success looking at those places too, is that they're in a museum, but they are not trendy, let's say, for a period of time, whereas other things are more trendy. And so they get put in storage, and they might, you know, be in storage for decades. And if you're a scholar and you're really researching that person, you can go to that museum and make contact with the curator, and you can make arrangements to go into their collection and study a painter's work or an artist's work. So it's because a museum is kind of like a repository for keeping things safe, not just for showing things.
You know, Yeah, I've had conversations with historians and historical societies, and there's something really great about the Internet, whereas a lot of time people were going, well, if you preserve your history there, it could all vanish. And that's still a point. I mean, it could happen. One day, you know, the plug on certain entities could happen, which could be good or bad. But anyway, sometimes it's just fun to pull the plug, but it's scary, but a lot of these museums, and even the smaller community ones, they don't have I mean, we're getting these huge collections, and you can't put everything on display. And there's, like, historical paintings that people really, you know, that's, like, valuable, and it's, like, at the bottom under a table somewhere. And it's not necessarily the museum's fault. It's we're getting to this point of, you know, taking care of, and I don't know. I sometimes look at all these empty buildings we have around the world and around this country, federal buildings that are empty, and Nancy always says, okay, you want to solve the homeless problem? Let's put people in these buildings. Yeah. You could put more museums and things, I don't know, instead of these big empty buildings. Just saying, uh-oh,
yeah.
I don't.
Well, you could. You know,
yeah, well, I mean, a museum has to be more than a shell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot to go into preservation of art objects that goes beyond that, you know, like temperature and humidity and mold and dampness and all that kind of stuff that they have to guard against. It's not that they're not and not totally inaccessible, but museums in a way are entertainment centers for most people that go to them. And they want to see their favorite paintings, or they've heard about an artist, they want to see that artist. So it's whatever kind of is in the news at the time. You know, like you look at the computer and say, okay, now trending. You know, it's kind of like
if
that.
If you don't go to Mona Lisa when you're in Paris, like people are going to look at you like you're nuts. You know, it's
that's true.
If you do not see the Mona Lisa. But then there's going to be somebody else's art that we're not hearing about that is just amazing. And I think you're right about this. It's something that it's a problem we have with the world is that a lot of people are also just reading headlines. And so if it's not trending, you're not going to hear about it. And things are only trending on the Internet because you've told it that this is what you like. And so it becomes trending.
And the other factor,
God help us, we're looking at something we've never known about.
No, it's going to keep serving you up the same slice of pizza.
Yeah.
Because that's what it seems
I don't
want
anchovies. We did this on our last show. No anchovies.
The pizza syndrome. Here's your pizza for today because that's what you had yesterday and that's what your computer remembers. So if you don't ever investigate something new.
Yeah.
The other thing about trending is that the museums have to be supported financially.
Yeah.
And so they have to sell tickets. And so they've got to give the people what they want because for most people, like I say, it's entertainment. It's an afternoon of enjoyment for most people that go there. Most people aren't scholars. But they still the museums have a responsibility and a very strong sense of the importance of keeping good artwork protected and preserving it so that the people who are really interested, you know, really want to study it, want to write about it, you know, et cetera, that they have access to it. So,
but I think there's also a way of the education. Yeah, now we need the funding, right? The museums need the funding.
It's very costly
it's expensive
to take things out of storage.
And to take just, you know, from the interviews we've done with De Grazia Gallery and the Sun, I've learned so much about what happens to art, like how they have to store it, like you're saying, and all these different, you know, the temperatures, especially out in the desert, you know, and they're in an adobe building, so that's a whole other thing, but it's actually more natural.
Right.
But there's things like, you know, you have to get people who restore paintings and do all that restorative work, which isn't exactly cheap, and it's just this huge thing, and we don't see it a lot on the public side, but there's stories to be told, and that's where the funding comes in, and people don't understand the cost of a story. You know, they don't understand, hey, going in and finding out, hey, you know, this ties into that, or finding the time to do research to take something that is unknown, dust it off, and find the sizzle spot so people go, oh, that's cool, and make it trending. You know what I mean? So if it's not known about, then it just stays there not known. Wow, what a different discussion we're having today.
And that's why it's so useful and important to have curators who can pull things together from out of the storage area, put them together with maybe more modern things, and you start to see everything differently. And you or their curation will tell a story, it will show progress, it will show the evolution of painting or printmaking or whatever. So people will relearn from the exhibits. Because education is a big part of a museum work also.
Well, it has to be, because if you don't, if you're not educated about the things that they're storing, then you don't care about them. You don't know enough to know that they're valuable, and if you don't think they're valuable, then they get to rot, and there goes your history.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's an education often has to be entertaining. You have to entertain. You have to put a tutu on and do a dance if you want someone to hear something new.
Well, you know, I mean,
I'll pass on that.
Well, or musicians have to play a cover song to get someone to listen to their new song. To me, I'm a little different. I want to hear the new stuff. I crave new.
But then you're educated in that because you've done your own music, so you know the feelings behind that. You know, but it's true. The average person wants to see the famous stuff.
Yeah. Like, someone blindfolds you and tastes something brand new that you don't know about. Like, that would freak people out.
Yeah.
Blind tastings, you know, it's something new. So, and it's so interesting to think about history, because there's so many people like Georgia Schreiber out there as artists, just people in history have done things that none of us know about. I mean, we found out things like, okay, today is Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo celebrations in this country come from Colombia, one of the best preserved old mining camps in California, which is a state park. They started Cinco de Mayo being a party in this country. So who would know that kind of stuff, right? Until you get out there and discover the unknown. And it is finding that stuff. I mean, there's all these people all around, but they're making history new by bringing it out. Like, history should be new. That's weird, but it's true. That's my poem for the day.
You know, talking about change, my cousin who is a docent in the Minneapolis Art Museum was telling me a story about they have a painting by Franz Marc, who was a member of a group called Der Blaue Reiter, and he did this painting called Blue Horses, and he did this in like the 20s, 30s, I'm not absolutely sure, but they had it hanging in this one spot in the museum for a long time. And it's a painting that everybody wants to see. Well, they moved it. they put something else there because it was a special exhibition, and people were upset. Their favorite painting that they always come to see was not there anymore. So they eventually they put it back because that was what people in Minneapolis wanted. But I think it's interesting. It's not limited to, you know, one place. It's none of us adjust well all the time to change, and especially changing our favorite stuff.
You know, it's interesting that the Grazia Gallery, and we'll play some of their music today now because we're talking about it, The Way of the Cross, they do this exhibit. Ted DeGrazia did it, you know, started it. You know, obviously it's his paintings. And, you know, they do it every year around Passover, Easter, and through the month of May. And Lance Labor, the Tucson dude, comes on our show. We call him the Tucson dude. And you've heard him on shows. He went in there and said, we keep doing the same thing every year. We need to stop it. He talked about people raising hell. Like, I don't mean to say that with the way of the cross, but I mean people got upset. They came. Yeah. I mean, he had to put it back, and he's now like, no matter what he has to do it every single year. They change it up some way, but every single year they have to keep doing it, and everyone, May 30th, it's down. So if you are one of those who bang on his door and yell at him, like, you better go see it now before it comes down this month. But that's the thing.
Some paintings that are like pilgrimage sites to people.
Yes.
And, you know, so, I mean, we understand, we've talked before about how powerful art is and, you know, why sometimes people try to control it. But that's a really good example.
So, Georgia Schreiber, I mean, now you would go somewhere. Like, if there was a museum, like, 5 to 8 hours away from you, would you drive out there just to go see his art?
Yeah, I would. I don't know whether I'd, you know, go every month, but I would definitely want to go see it. Yeah.
At least do one thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I think that's the thing. You know, it's like people do get into it, and I think it is cool that, you know, when people really get into art that way, I think that's an exciting thing, quite frankly.
It's always fun to see, too, how an artist might change over the years. Like, you know, if there's a 10 to 20-year span in between the kind of work they're doing, because most artists tend to branch out, and then a few years go by and they branch out again, and then we're back to whether or not the public likes the new version of what they're doing.
And you find that often in artists that are, you know, somebody will like somebody's work a lot, the galleries will show it will sell well, and then the artist gets a little bored with working in a particular way or with that particular subject, and he will move on. And lots of times people have a hard time adjusting to new work by the same artist, or gallery says, I can't sell that, and, you know, keep doing your old stuff because this stuff isn't selling. And that's really hard for an artist.
Because saying, please be a money machine and not an artist.
Well, yeah, and it is funny. I mean, I know in South Africa I started painting cosmos, you know, pictures of the flowers that are pink and kind of magenta and white. And they're not native to South Africa. They're actually an invasive species, but they're beautiful and there's fields of them. And, yeah, I was painting in public, and once I started the cosmos thing, I couldn't get out of it. That's all you know, every order of every painting, I'm like, I felt like I was doing, like, you know how you used to make stamps out of potatoes?
Right.
Stamping flowers.
making money is very nice, and it certainly helps us survive.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we need to grow, too, and sometimes the only way to do that is to switch gears.
That's true. You know, and then I'd start doing dog portraits, and I'd do a German Shepherd, and here comes a bunch of German Shepherd orders.
But
and
we
I was
get,
like, can't we have a different dog?
Well, I want to ask you this, Victoria, because at the same time, you know, we need change to create energy movement. You know, it's like if a store doesn't change out its front window, like even it's the same thing with websites. You know, we do a lot of that stuff over here.
Right.
You know, if you don't change your headlines, then no one's going to come and look. You know, if you don't change your front window, everyone's going to say, oh, they just have the same old stuff. So there's this weird balance as you know, how we are as human beings to, like, even as a musician, you're going to change out your set, but please play the old favorite, a restaurant. Don't change everything on your menu. You have to keep the cheeseburger. You know, otherwise people are going to get mad. That's what they come there for, right?
Yeah,
so
they want the same spot on the menu, too.
Yeah, exactly. How dare you even add a new graphic. But when I look at Silver City, you guys do a lot of events. You have the Red Dot Art Walk and everything, the art tour, the studio tour that you do in every October with the Silver City Galleries and then the Art Association. But you also have, like, the Clay Festival coming up in August. And see, this is my way of promoting the Clay Festival coming up.
You're very sneaky. You just slid right into that.
Right into that. But my point with it is I'm balancing this. This is my little segue, is that if you did the event exactly the same every year, then eventually people won't go. So, like, you have to have clay, but you have to change the clay event a little bit, you know.
Yeah, it's a different kind of clay.
To make people want to go back again. Isn't that true? So it's like it changes
every
year.
And we have changed it, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So tell everybody what to expect this year.
Tradition is nice, and we went to the Clay Festival this year. We wonder what they're going to do this year. So there's an anticipation that we are going to do something new, which we always do. We always change things out, and you know. But we always have a certain number of tours, a certain number of lectures and workshops, and exhibits and stuff like that. So so the format. Or the elements are similar, but there's enough difference that people can always find something new, and we try to do that with all of our events.
And that's important in art, period. And by the way, one of the changes is it's no longer in August. It's July 22nd through 30th, and you can go to playfestival.com. So just so you know, so don't listen to Lisa. Just go to the website.
Don't show up late.
Yeah, but events are a piece of art to me. I think a really well-done event is it's crafty and creative, and you know, yeah, you've got to be smart to make it go off without a hitch. I think a chef is an artist too, you know. So there's this, there's that weird balance of change and like keeping your signature style too. Like,
right,
do artists ever just bust out that I'm doing? I couldn't imagine your art being anything different than who you are, Victoria. I mean, it would just be, I mean, of course you could change it, but I mean, every painting is different. There's no way that you don't look at your art. You can do a series, you know, your subject matter changes a lot, and every painting is completely different, but you have a signature style that no one else has. So do you ever see artists completely bust out and change?
Yeah, I think serious artists try to do that, and I hope I do it, you know.
Yeah, you do.
So anyway, we were talking about change and things leading into other things, and one of the things that's coming up is that they tried last year, which was successful for the first time that they tried it. It was called Southwest Print Fiesta. And this, they did printmaking with a giant steamroller out in the street.
Cool.
And it was pretty exciting.
That's cool.
Everybody
that
was
cool.
sort of
That's
jumping
cool.
up and down because the steamroller was so heavy, vibrating. But it was really wonderful. And this year, last year they made prints. This year they're expanding it. In addition to prints, they're going to be making banners. And those banners are going to be huge, done with a steamroller, and then they're going to be used in the Day of the Dead festival we're going to have at that time.
Oh, wow.
So one event kind of feeds another event.
I love that.
And
maybe
people,
you should just get a big pond of clay and let people jump in it.
Yeah. Uh-oh, that's getting weird.
We discussed at one time having a mud wrestling event, but we decided to get
That'll attract a whole different kind of audience.
Yeah.
A different crowd.
Yes.
Yeah. Just imagine. But I mean, you know, people. There is, you know, there's a whole bunch of things you can do with clay. So I mean, it's good. But everyone, clayfestival.com is the website. Such an interesting conversation that Georgia Schreiber has got us on the track of change. And
yeah, we hardly talked about him at all.
Well, but you know, we need to know more. We all need more information on him. He needs to be. I'm glad you're writing about him and bringing, you know, his art up and getting people to think about who he was.
If I find out anything else in the next year or so, I will write it up and give it to you, and you can decide whether you want to continue on with him or not.
Yeah, no, I think you've got to keep up.
Yeah.
I loved even, you know, his title, like, of his series, you know, The Panorama. Is just, to me, the panorama of America. I mean, that's
pretty big.
That's big. That's a big panorama.
It was.
I mean, how long did he spend in Texas? I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, I don't know, but it sure grabbed people at the time because, I mean, they hung his work. They were going to have, like, an opening in, you know, a couple of days. But the people started coming in, and by the time the opening occurred, everything was already sold. He was wildly successful, and then he moved that. He had that show, that kind of a theme. He took that that show all over the country, and had it in museums. It was like an invitational kind of traveling show that he did, and took it all over the country. So that was mostly his lithographic work. So, you know, and now we don't hear about him. Now we don't hear about him.
Yeah.
So.
You know,
it's interesting.
And I love that he was a traveler with his art, like Thomas Moran. We were talking about him and how, you know, what he did with the national parks and, you know, these people traveling around with their art. Let me tell you, it just wasn't as easy as us getting in our SUV or catching a plane. You'd have a problem. Sorry, but we have no room for you. You can get kicked off your plane. But, you know, so when you think about back then what travel was like versus now, it's just night and day difference, you know. So, and trying to keep things, you know, well, lithographs, you're not as bad temperature control, I'd say, but still, you don't want to be in the Texas sun. So,
we know about traveling with artwork.
Yeah,
no matter
it's
what,
not easy.
Something gets damaged.
It's not easy. It's like trying to transport like wedding cakes. Yeah. Never do it. Let the professionals do it, especially in the mountains. Yeah. But Victoria,
but
always fun chatting with you because we always get off topic.
Yes, it is fun.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. You can view Victoria Chick's artwork at victoriachick.com. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com.